Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi folks, welcome to another one of these political chats that Dan and I have. Instead of talking about the Labour Party this time, we're going to be talking about reform.
That's not because they've hit rock bottom yet.
No.
They're still in freefall.
They are in a bit of a dip, and yeah. They're doing very weird things. Mm. And everyone's looking around saying, well, that was a bit unexpected, Nige. Yeah. What was this for? But before we begin, Islander 5 is currently on sale. It is the best issue we have ever done, and it is also the fastest selling issue we've ever done. Half of the stock has been sold in the first week. It's not going to last the sort of month and a half we were going to sell it for, so get it while you can. Anyway, right, let's go on to some polling data, shall we? So Politico's poll of polls only goes up to January the 8th, so it's about a week out of date. Everything looks fairly healthy on here. Like, this is good numbers for Nige. So if you're looking at the polls a week out of date, you're thinking, well, everything's fine. Like, I don't know, you know, I've been through a couple of little dips, but they're nothing major, and I'm about 25%.
Well, there's plenty of fresh air between reform and everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. More than 10 points, you know, more than 10 points in the polls. But if you go to different polling trackers that are slightly more updated, I mean, this the YouGov one goes up to the 12th of January. So when we're recording this, what's the date today? It's the 15th. So this is only a couple of days ago. You'll notice that actually they've been taking a dip there. And the polling average is down to 24%. The Tories,
that's a lot thinner, isn't it?
It is. And so you, by looking at one poll of polls, you could feel yourself in quite a comfortable position. And maybe you've got a bit of room to mess around in. But in another, you're not. I mean, a 4% difference between reform and the Tories.
Well, I mean, that's a couple of news cycles away from going the other way.
Yeah.
I can't believe the Tories. The Tories in second place.
Well, where's Labour? Doesn't even.
I suppose the key difference with this one is that they all have... Because the problem with these polls, right, is that everything from second to fifth place is so close that you only had to need 1 or 2% onto each everybody in that second place boundary, yeah, and all of a sudden you've eaten 10 points,
yes,
or 8 points.
So the reason I couldn't see Labour on there is because Labour and Tories are neck and neck on about 20%, 19%, and Farage only 5 points ahead, despite the fact, of course, and we've laboured this point ad nauseum, Starmer is the least popular Prime Minister since records began.
Well, and also doing... I mean, a genius level attack on the British people on a daily basis. Yeah, we're just going to call you all far right Nazis because you don't like children being murdered. We're going to take away bloody jury trials, and we're going to stamp a barcode on your head. And it's just that every day.
Suspend the winter fuel payments in the middle of winter and things like this.
Yeah, and a fifth of the British population is still like, yep, sounds good to me.
Well, they work for the NHS.
Well, there is that, yeah.
But the point is, only a quarter of people are thinking about joining voting reform at this point, and that's a bit weird because, like you say, it's an unprecedented assault on the British public by their own government, by what was an unpopular government to start with. It wasn't a government that came with a huge amount of goodwill. And it was burned up very, very quickly. And so how is Nigel fumbling the bag on this?
I mean, the reason why reform looks good is because you're comparing it to Labour Party and the Conservative Party. If you were to review it on its own merits, it's a very different picture.
It's not the dissident right-wing party I would choose, no.
If it even is that in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm probably going to have to vote for them. Like, I just don't see any other options. Because, I mean, at least it's not Labour or Conservatives. But hold that thought there, because we'll come back to that. Because for some reason this week, and nobody saw this coming, and it's very difficult to explain why they've done this, but they've decided to take on Nadeem Zahawi. Now, this was just a very, very peculiar choice. Because, of course, Nadeem Zahawi was former Conservative Party chair. He is himself an immigrant from Iraq. He had his tax scandal in July.
Is he a first-generation immigrant from Iraq?
Yeah. He came over when he was 11.
Right.
He had a tax scandal back in 2022, and that's the reason he got refused peerage by the Conservative Party. He's got a kind of slight disgrace attached to his name.
Well, and also we should point out he's one of the founders of YouGov,
one of the founders of YouGov. He has had quite a long parliamentary career, to be honest. He was the COVID-19's vaccine minister, in which he was an insane pro-vaccine, pro-lockdown, pro-vaccine passport.
I remember
pro-vaccinating children. I mean, it was only a few years ago. So
absolutely not forgiven him in any way whatsoever, and not until the day I die will I.
Yeah, absolutely bonkers. And the thing is, as well, the reform membership and voter base is on the vaccine skeptic side, right? They kind of naturally self-select for people who do not trust the system and view Nigel Farage as at least outside of the consensus between Labour and Tories. So it's disproportionately that reform members and voters are against this kind of level of state control.
And the question persists with Nigel Farage, is he also like his supporters, that he likes to be outside the system, or does he just want to join it?
Well, it's very clear that he just wants to join it.
Yeah.
Very clear. He was also the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He was in the 2022 Conservative Party leadership elections.
I mean, to be fair, he was Chancellor for about a week or something like that, whatever it was.
Yeah, it wasn't very long. Yes. It was under Truss, wasn't it?
Was it?
Or, no, that was Kwasi Kwarteng.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah, I think it was under Boris. But the point is, he's one of Boris's cabinet members.
Funny how that keeps happening. A lot of Boris people tend to.
Yeah, it's really difficult to understand why Farage wants anyone who is associated with Boris, because during this time, of course, we were subjected to the Boris wave, where net migration was reaching nearly a million a year.
Well, I mean, the question is not so much why does he want any of them. Why is he trying to complete the set?
that genuinely is the question. I just don't understand why, as a right-wing party, you would want this chap. I mean, it's hard to imagine that the Conservatives want this chap, right? Like, as a Conservative party, he would feel like a noose around your neck. He would feel like an albatross, because it's like, okay, but this guy did XYZ. I hated XYZ.
Yes.
Why would I want to vote for that party?
Well, I did try and turn that around the other day. I asked a question on Twitter to see if I could find any intelligent responses. Not that I was able to provide one myself. And I just framed the question, look, let's assume reform needs a number of people who understand how government works from the inside. Because one of the biggest problems that reform is going to have is navigating around the civil service. And actually, I've been doing some thinking, which is outside the scope of this, is you need to start viewing these systems in a completely different mechanism. And I'll come back to that at some future point. But let's say you just need a number of people who understand the system. Well, which ones do you take? Because as soon as you start asking it from the positive point of view of which ones would you actually want to take, it gets really difficult.
It really does. And moreover, like, who is this appealing to, right? Because, I mean, people, like, you know, I remember, like, a year ago making a video now saying, Nice, shouldn't you have, like, a cabinet in waiting around you so people can look at them and go, oh, yeah, very competent people, can't wait till they're in government. And what percentage of the population, or in any capacity, the voters, the insiders, whoever, were thinking, well, I'm a bit unsure about Nigel, but if he just gets Nadeem Zahawi, then I'll be persuaded
over. Yes. Like, what question is Nadeem Zahawi the answer?
Exactly. Yes. And, I mean, he lost his seat in 2024. He didn't challenge it, but it was clear that under Rishi Sunak...
He would have got in anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, the 250 Conservative MPs getting metaphorically...
Was he Richmond, this one?
I can't remember which one he was now, actually. I'm pretty sure... Was he Richmond? No, Stratford-upon-Avon.
Stratford, okay.
But the point is, it was clear that under Rishi Sunak, the Conservatives were taking their bloodbath, yep. And he was going to be a casualty. So wisely, he just stepped down and didn't contest it, which, fair enough, a lot of them were like that. But it's just very bizarre, because it's like, okay, but what problem does this solve? And as you pointed out, okay, you need people with experience from within. But on one hand, you are like, okay, well, at least he knows how the system works. It's like, yeah. Mm. But he also comes with all of this baggage.
Yes.
You know, where all of these negative things are attached to him. And actually, it probably would be better to just start with someone at zero, who's just a blank slate.
Yeah, I mean, the danger is you're going to get led around by the civil service and the permanent secretaries. But that happened to this guy as well.
Yeah. And the only, I mean, he has, if he had done like a Sweller Braverman or Liz Truss, where they just come out and started going, no, this was the problem. Like, yeah. Sweller Braverman came out and said, look, I'm a lawyer, Rishi. I can tell you all of the laws we need to repeal in order to get this moving. And Rishi was like, no, I'm not going to do anything.
I mean, actually, that is the answer to my earlier question. Liz Truss and Sweller Braverman would be smart picks for Nigel.
Yeah.
But he hasn't gone that way. He's gone for the most hated characters during the period where they locked us in our homes for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, like, Liz Truss is at least, you know, making the arguments that are correct, and Sweller Braverman has been quite hard on a number of issues, especially right-wing ones, frankly, and so they would be more credible than Nadeem Zahawi, who just seems to have slinked off after screwing things up as part of Boris's government. And now seems to be sort of like Jack Sparrowing it, getting off onto the bit
where the ship is sinking beginning. Yeah.
Right at the beginning, yeah. Anyway, let's carry on. It's just very bizarre, but I think Nigel is telling us what this is about here. He's a successful businessman who reached the top of the tree in politics and knows how to get stuff done. All right, okay.
Is that an admission that Nigel doesn't?
Well, it kind of sounds that way, doesn't it? But also, I think it's the he's a successful businessman bit. As in, he can make money. And Nigel Farage is very concerned about money.
Yes, that is true, actually.
And so it is hard to understand why, actually, because you think Nigel Farage leading the polls with his own party, where are the donors? There should be loads of donors, right? Nigel Farage shouldn't have a problem getting donors to reform.
Maybe that's just his kink, you know, businessmen who have made some money or something. Because apparently, I mean, he's complained on a number of occasions that he hasn't made as much money as he should have done.
Yeah.
I mean, is it that? I mean, he went gooey for, what was it, Zaya?
Yeah, Zia Youssef, only 200K, boom, chair of the party.
Yeah.
That's cheap. But I don't understand how this is working. Because, like, Nigel has got enough former Tories around him now that he should be able to be like, okay, look, phone up the Tory donors and arrange a dinner with them. And I'm going to go over there and charm them, explain how the Conservative Party is not really a Conservative Party anymore, but I am the real Conservative in the room now, and I'm going to get things done, and you actually want to donate to me because I'm top of the polls.
Well, you would think that, you know, the high-level business types would have figured that out for themselves at this point and be beating a path to his door to say, look, you know, these are the things that really matter to me that fit within your agenda. Please prioritise these ones, and these things would really hurt me, so, you know, maybe get around to those when you can a bit later. I mean, they're just standard polling for donation stuff.
It is weird, considering how centre-right Nigel Farage is, that he hasn't been inundated with right-wing businessmen saying, I would like a tax cut. I would like you to reduce the amount of tax I pay. And I'm going to pay you, you know, a couple of million, or donate to your party a couple of million. And when you win, you slash my taxes. Because that would be a very... I just don't know why they haven't done this, right? Nigel should be swimming in cash at the moment from basically every business magnate in this country, because he's running on a platform of lowering taxes.
Well, unless the thing that really moves the dial for them is not tax cuts, it's cheap labour inputs.
Well, that's a great point. Anyway, so they had a press conference that I watched, and it was... it wasn't terrible, actually. Zahawi is at least a good speaker.
Oh, yeah, he's competent in the politician's role. Yeah.
He speaks up, growing up in Iraq, that's a country that was fundamentally broken. He doesn't want that to happen in Britain.
Too late.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my brother in Christ. You were an immigrant, and you're in the government that imported the record number of immigrants.
Yes.
You are part of the problem there, I'm afraid. Like, sorry. And he 20 minutes in, he talks about his British dream as if we're the American frontier and we're just here to be exploited by foreigners. And he's called out by one of the journalists later on, like, why did you change your heart calling Nigel Farage a racist and a fascist and whatnot? The Conservatives have put this out, obviously, very quick to attack their own. But as you can see, he's like, you know, I'm not British born, but I'm as British as you are. Your comments are offensive and racist. Like, yeah, but in 2015, that was your guy. And then a couple of years after that, he went into government. And now that's an attack line on him. Like, the Conservatives, like, no one is coming out of this looking good, right?
No.
The Conservatives attacking their own former MP with his statements when he was one of their MPs just before he went into government. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that. The Tories' line has been... that reform is filling up with has-been politicians, i.e. our ones.
Yeah, Conservatives.
And it's like, yeah, that is true, but it's not. That's not a win for you.
They've been stepping on this rake repeatedly. And everyone is. Because a defection is actually a kind of gross thing, right? It shows that you're not really committed to the cause. It shows that whatever's happening in your camp has been so mishandled.
Is it the Groucho Marx quote?
I wouldn't have any club that would have me as a member.
No, not that one. The one which is, these are my principles, and if you don't like them, I have other ones.
Yes, yeah. You know, that literally is how Nedim is coming across it. Because, of course, there he is as a nice left-wing immigrant saying, your comments are offensive and racist. I'd be frightened to live in a country run by you. I mean, it's 10 years on, but you were in government. And, yeah. You know, you weren't exactly young and naive when you made these statements. You were, you know, 48. So it's not like you can chalk this up to youthful indiscretion or something. And what changed? It's like, well, I do have other principles. I have right-wing principles if Nigel needs those. And no, I don't think he does.
Yeah.
And so the Conservatives attacking their own former... Chancellor of the Treasury or whatever it was he did. It looks terrible, right? No one is coming out of this looking good.
No, I mean, I would say more, but I'm kind of lost for words at the failure on all angles of this. The Tories are saying, look, basically all of our guys are useless politicians, and that's an attack vector. Yeah. Reform agree that the Tories are useless and are hiring them en masse.
I don't understand why they're doing this. And so that sort of like dip in the polls is starting to become more. And the thing is, this happened after the polling. It wouldn't have shown up in the polling yet. It'll be in the next couple of days that we'll start to see this appear in the polling. So I guess next week we'll revisit this and see how things look.
Farage seems to be testing the assumption that his polling is like a ratchet with a lock hammer on
yes.
it. That he can only ever turn it up,
yeah.
And once you've gone to reform, you don't go back.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we say this every one of these streams that we do. I suppose we have to gonna vote for reform. But, I mean, there will come a point where it's just like, well, what's the point? What's the point?
Yeah, I mean, put a pin in that. We'll come back to that. So the question is, why did Farage take him? And this is a clip that he... from the press conference, and Wolf here seems to have got it correct.
One of the other jobs, of course, that Nadeem did for the Conservative Party was to be the chairman of it and to raise a huge amount of money.
Ah.
And we're hoping he'll do much the same for us.
Right. Well, I mean, that cuts to the nub of it, doesn't it?
It really does. Why did you take this absolute failure and strongly disliked Conservative politician? You can raise a lot of money. Okay. All right.
Okay. All my prior confusion is gone. Yeah, I get it now. Yep, yeah. Fine.
But again, the doesn't Zia Yusuf raise money? Like, Rupert Lowe was raising money when he was kicked out of Reform.
Yes.
In a meeting that day with donors. And, you know, Rupert Lowe, you know, long-time businessman, very successful. I think I'll kick that guy out. I'm not making as much money as I was now. I guess I'll get Nadeem Zahawi. It's like, right, there's some... Not only was that insane, but there's a kind of, like, great replacement angle going on here.
Yeah. Yes. Stout Englishman Rupert Lowe replaced with Iraqi first-generation immigrant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just really weird. Anyway, why Nadeem decided to jump ship is because there's no way he's getting back into Parliament, basically, without Nigel Farage. The Conservatives are not going to be winning hundreds of seats in the next election if things carry on as
right, and even if they won 100 seats, they're probably not going to assign one to him.
Yeah.
Because the rump of the Tory party is, well, to the left of the Lib Dems.
Yes, and also bitter. Right?
Yes.
They're, you know, we don't want to give this away. And so the only way that Zahawi could get back into Parliament is literally going through Nigel Farage. And he was, as I said, denied a peerage just weeks before defecting to Reform because of his tax issues a few years ago. So you can see why this works for him too. And people were just digging up all sorts of comments that they'd made about each other because, of course...
Yeah.
2020 was not that long ago, right? It was 6 years ago now, but 6 years ago for men in their 40s, 50s, and 60s is a drop in the bucket.
It feels like 5 minutes ago to me, and I'm 10 years younger than
exactly. It feels like just the other day to me, too. But you've got, like, this is just a banger from Farage.
I thought Zahawi was one of those people that could replace Boris Johnson. To break us out of the old Etonian mould, to get somebody different, somebody who'd succeeded in private business before politics. I thought Zahawi had principles. Tonight we learn he's just about climbing that greasy pole, as so many of them are.
I mean, I think you're right, Nige.
I mean, whatever that is, 2020, Nige
22.
Is... okay, he is... 2022. He's on the money there.
And... Yep, you've got him. I think you've absolutely nailed him. And now I'm sure that he's not climbing the greasy pole and he has stuck to his original principles. But so let's talk about Reform, right? The constitution of Reform, because it is a very persuasive angle of attack from Labour that Reform is just the Conservative Party reconstituting itself.
Oh yeah, I mean I've proposed that basically, Nigel Farage is running the world's most elaborate Conservative Party leadership campaign by leaving the Conservative leader in place and changing literally everybody else.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, Reform are basically all Tories at this point, right?
Yeah.
So Nigel himself was a Conservative. He left in the 90s.
Yes, Tice. Wanted,
yeah. Tice is indeed a former Conservative. He's got articles on, like, you know, Conservative Home and various other things. He was a donor and member of the Tory party for most of his adult life. He wrote a 2008 report for a Conservative think tank in 2017. He wrote more for them, et cetera, et cetera. And, he's just always been, like, in the background as a donor of the Tory party, not happy with the way they were going, so started Reform and was the funder for it until it started going up in the polls when Nigel Farage was like, oh, wait, we're going to win in Clacton? Right, I'll jump in then, right? And that's why he didn't go to America to support Trump.
And people I know that know him... say that for him, Reform is just a Tory revenge vehicle.
Yeah.
It's they wouldn't take him in,
yeah,
and so he wants to hurt them.
I've heard similar things about Farage, just in general, actually, because the Conservatives should have been a hardcore Leave party, and they should have been, like, Nigel Farage shouldn't have had to have been a founding member of UKIP, that should have been the Conservative position, right? Mm. And he's correct on that, don't get me wrong. You know, leaving the Conservative Party to form UKIP and then campaigning for 40 years or however long it's bloody been, yeah, to get to the point where now he's destroying the Conservative Party, like, there is an arc of vengeance against the Tory party.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I had dinner with Farage maybe 15 years ago, and he told a story which I presume is true, because, I mean, it was, I mean, maybe he was making it up, but I presume it's true, that when he really started to gain traction in UKIP, he was sat down, I can't remember who it was, but it was one of the Tory grandees sat him down in some club or dinner or something like that, and said, what job would you want to basically make UKIP go away? You know, and basically hinting at things around the level of Home Secretary, Foreign Secretary, something like that,
right.
Which is a major office.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's a cabinet member. Like,
well, yeah. I mean, cabinet. Senior cabinet, yeah, as well. So, and I mean, if that is true, that they wanted to get him in, but they didn't, weird. And then Tice presumably was shut out of even that option.
Well, this would track as well, because, I mean, this is what they did with Douglas Carswell. They pinched him from UKIP. He was UKIP's one MP. Did he win in Clacton?
Yeah, he was Clacton.
Yeah, so Clacton, based Clacton, by the way.
Yes.
You know, you can see they've been the vanguard of...
Yes.
Rupert Lowe has turned Great Yarmouth into a vanguard as well, which is great. But they pinched him as well, because you can see they're just shoring up their right flank, right? This is like, well, we can just, you know, essentially buy them out. And this was the big mistake that Boris made in 2019, 2020, 2022, is not just giving off, you know, like Nigel stood down in 2019, not contesting seats that the Conservatives were contesting, so Boris could win his 380-seat majority, right?
Yeah, what a blunder.
Well, yes, obviously, but you couldn't have known that in advance, because Boris was hardcore, you know, get Brexit done, all that sort of stuff, and everyone was like, okay, I'm, you know, maybe he's not going to backstab us. Who knows? He's saying all the right things. Nigel was like, okay, well, I'll
at the time, I believed Boris.
I did too. You had no reason not to think that he wasn't going to do
it. He'd spent a lifetime at that point putting out base Telegraph articles.
Yeah.
You literally had no reason to suspect that he was going to do the dirty on us, apart from the fact he was a Tory politician.
Owen Jones totally won me over by going, look at this. He's described gay people as bum boys and Muslim women as letterboxes. I was like, oh, right, okay, then I'll vote for him if you insist, Owen. You know, that's what won me over. And he backstabbed us to hell. But the mistake that he made was not just essentially conceding that Farage had given him this win. And what they should have done is given Farage a peerage, stuck him in the House of Lords, and you never have really heard from him again. He'd have been on GB News just, you know, doing his little show, but he would have been in the House of Lords, you know, with his sort of like, you know, ho 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 face, like laughing at things, condemning things on the floor, and then that would have been, you know, the government wouldn't have had to have worried about him again.
And all you had to do was do that at any point before the polling flipped in Clacton.
Yes, literally yes. Mm. You know, at any point before 2024, you would have been fine. For that would have been neutralised Nigel as an actor, an agent on the board, and everything would be like, they wouldn't be a reform party, you know, to do this. Or if they was,
well, Tice would be rolling around in the background.
It would be Tice on maybe 13%, something like that. You know, he's not. But anyway, so that's the issue there. But then, of course, you've got Lee Anderson, who's of course another former Conservative.
Yeah.
Lee Anderson is not just a Conservative either. He was, of course, in the Labour Party, but under Corbyn, the Labour Party went bonkers, and so he joined the Conservative Party, and then he joined the Reform Party. He did contest his seat as a Reform MP, so he has got, you know, roots in his own seat, which is good. But again, someone who I'm not entirely sure I know where they stand, frankly.
Oh, he doesn't inspire. No, he's...
I don't mind Lee Anderson either, but like it's one of those things where it's this feels like political maneuvering. Right?
Yes.
Like, Labour's going down, I'm going to jump to the Conservatives. Oh, Conservatives going down, I'm going to jump to Reform. Right? So right, okay, fair enough. Anyway, then you've got Sarah Pochin, who, she was a member of the Conservative Party, representing Willesden and Rope Ward after gaining a seat in the... Conservative councillor. Then she got in a bit of a barney in the Conservative Party, left. Oh, no, she was expelled, actually, of a breach of the party rules. She rejoined in 2022 and was involved in the Conservative leadership election, but then she jumped ship in 2025.
What was the thing that she said that almost got her booted out of reform? It was,
oh God, it was just the other day.
Something mildly based. And
No, it was. It was, I'm sick of seeing mixed race couples on
That's
TV.
It.
Yeah. 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 Which, because, I mean, it is ridiculous. Every yes. couple is a mixed race couple. Whereas in Britain, it's something like 7% of the population are in mixed race.
I mean,
that's not even white to non-white. That's anyone.
Oh no, every advert is a black man and a white woman. I don't know why. Why can it not be like, I don't know, an Indian woman with a white man, for example? But no, it has to be a black man and a white woman.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Progressive messaging. Anyway, then you've got Dame Andrea Jenkins, of course. She was the mayor of Greater Lincolnshire. You know,
is this the one that insisted on doing her failed Eurovision Song Contest entry?
Yes, right. She sang the song about insomnia at the form conference.
Weird, but okay.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, but anyway, you know, former Conservative, quite important in the party. Then you've got Danny Kruger, who is of course the MP for East Wiltshire.
He's the one I dislike the least.
Yeah, no, I don't mind Kruger. Although we were at the Now in England conference where he was speaking, and he was the CivNat on the board. So you had Rupert Lowe, Thomas Skinner, Robert Toombs, and Danny Kruger, and Toombs and Kruger were like, "Oh yes, anyone is English." And you could see Lowe and Skinner being like,
"Yeah."
The room just kind of exploded at that point.
I mean,
but I do like
little time for CivNats, but at least they're on the journey.
Yeah, and he's an intelligent, well-read man, and he's a serious thinker at least. So, if you were going to take he is actually a conservative as well, right?
Yeah.
So if you were going to take conservatives from the Conservative Party, you could make a good case for Danny Kruger.
There's a short list, and he could well be on it. Yeah.
Very much so. Much more difficult to take, you know, any of the others, but okay, whatever. Then we've got Nadine Dorries again. Why you would want Nadine Dorries is just baffling to me. I mean, I read her book, and it is just 100% pro-Boris propaganda.
Well, she's just mad. She's just a, you know, instead of being a mad cat lady, she just keeps Boris memorabilia.
Exactly. She's a mad Boris fanboy or fangirl. But yeah, she was a Conservative MP and had been the Secretary of State for Digital Culture, Media and Sport.
Oh yeah, so we got Nadim doing the bloody vaccines, and she was doing the online harms bill.
I was going to get to that. Yeah, she is the author of the online harms bill.
Right.
And so when Farage is like, yeah, that online harms bill, that's bad. And she's got Zahawi and Dorries sat there being like, yeah, we were part of the government. I mean, I was the guy who scripted it, who wrote it, and he was part of the government that greenlighted it. And now Starmer's putting it into place and everything. You know, when everything on Twitter is getting censored, that's why that is, right?
Yeah.
It's the online harms bill.
It's why when we do segments and we go to a link and it's blocked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that. And so, and she's responsible for that. And so it's like, why would you take her? I just don't understand why you take her. And of course, she's another one where in 2023, she announced she was standing down rather than waiting for the next election because I think she could see the writing on the wall. Again, another Jack Sparrow, just like, yep, this ship's going down. I'm stepping onto the dock. Then you've got Jonathan Gullis, who, again, another Sunak casualty. As you can see, he was the MP for Stoke-on-Trent North from 2019 to 2024. Why? What happened in 2024, Jonathan? A massacre? Right, okay, yeah, bad. That's rough. But yeah, he was deputy chairman of the Conservative Party. He was at the tail end of the Sunak stuff. Like, this is in 2024, he was made deputy chairman. Basically a bit of a non-entity.
Yeah, well, I hadn't heard of him, so yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's been around. He was the Parliamentary Undersecretary of State for Schools Standards by Liz Truss.
So the handful of Tory MPs that I knew prior to the 2024 election, I was saying to them, just jump ship now before the election, because if you do it afterwards, they're going to see it for what it is and they won't take you. Turns out I was wrong.
Yeah, well, like I said, he was the Parliamentary Undersecretary for State for School Standards by Liz Truss in 2022, but was dismissed by Sunak. So he's not anyone of any great note. But he is a former secretary who is involved in government, former Conservative who's involved in government, and jumped ship to reform a few months back. probably never heard of Liam Neeson, but she was an MP for Great Grimsby, and as you can see...
She looks like a policewoman.
She does, but she was a Conservative as well, obviously.
Okay.
She lost her seat in 2024, again another Sunak casualty, who's jumped ship to Reform, because how else is she going to get back into the Parliament?
Yeah.
It's not going to be via the Conservative Party, because they're going to have about 48 seats in the next election, judging from the polls at the moment. Then you've got Lalia Cunningham, who's been making waves recently. She's not ever been an MP, but she has stood as a candidate for council elections, London Assembly, and...
The Muslim lass.
The Muslim girl, yeah.
Right.
In the 2024 election, she was due to be the Conservative candidate in Rotherham, but she withdrew because, quote, a change in circumstances, which meant the party didn't even contest the seat. So she was going to be. And then, so she's not done anything of note, just to be clear.
But another Egyptian.
Yes, she's an immigrant from Egypt. Yeah.
Yep. That's correct. Okay.
And she defected to Reform a couple of months ago. Well, 6 months ago now. I know, a bit more than that, actually. But then you've got, of course, Zia Youssef.
Yeah.
Zia Youssef was a paid-up member of the Tory party until 2024, which is interesting because I'm pretty sure he joined Reform while he was still a paid-up member, but whatever, it doesn't really matter. Then you've got a few other non-notables, like Laura Ann Jones, who is a Welsh councillor, Conservative councillor, jumped to Reform. Same difference. Graham Simpson, another councillor from Scotland, jumped to the Reform Party. And you know what? Even Rupert Lowe was a member of the Conservative Party.
Yep.
But Rupert was well ahead of the curve on this. He was a member of the Conservative Party until 1993. He left the party after getting upset about the Maastricht Treaty, which he said to me...
Oh, based. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, he genuinely was.
That actually was the correct jumping off point.
Well, you know what? Actually, I can give you a quote from his Islander interview on this. Because it's actually quite funny. He says, "My first real foray into politics came with the Maastricht Treaty. I read through it. Spaghetti. Loose ends everywhere. I wrote to every MP, MEP, and peer asking if they'd read it. Most hadn't. They voted it through regardless. I became convinced that Europe had failed politically and was trying to impose an economic fix to realise its dream of a United States of Europe. That woke me up." Long interview in Islander with Rupert Lowe. And it's a good one because he talks about Cromwell, but he also talks about... that, and he's right on that, and that's why he left the Conservative Party in 1993. He actually campaigned against them in 1997 for the Referendum Party, which I don't know anything about.
That was James Goldsmith's thing.
Is that an anti-EU party, is it?
Yeah, that was... James Goldsmith, he was this sort of arch-globalist businessman, but he absolutely nailed what the effect of the changes to world trade policy were being at the time.
Right, right.
What I will do is I'll dig out the... interview that he gave and send it to you back in 1993 or two, whatever.
Oh, really?
It was, and it is so prescient you won't believe it.
Okay.
Yeah,
so the point being is that basically all of the Reform defections, or at least a huge number of them, at least the recent ones, Tories who got wiped out by Sunak's disastrous...
So can I add something to this? Because
yeah,
you might assume that that's just normal, right? Because when I used to be a Tory for my sins back in the day, and then obviously when UKIP came along, it was like, okay, there's a better alternative now. And I went to a couple of UKIP meetings, and you've probably experienced as well, because you got much deeper into UKIP than I ever did. But I was expecting to turn up to those meetings and find a whole bunch of former Tories. I didn't. No. I found maybe one or two, but they were almost all either non-voters or former Labour voters.
Yes. UKIP was very much filled with former Labour voters because there's a lot more working class coded.
Yes.
And so I found UKIP a very comfortable party to be a part of, actually. Everyone was very kind to me.
And by Labour voters, I don't mean like how you think of them today as woke lunatics.
Yeah, no.
I mean as in the old-fashioned working class, salt of the earth Brit type.
Yes.
Yeah.
UKIP was very much like that. Not filled with ex-Tories. So this is unusual, right? This is a new state of affairs.
Yes.
But a lot of them were the product of Cameron's affirmative action programs. And they've been taken in by Farage for the same reason that they were advanced in the first place. Is that a lot of them are kind of diversity hires.
I mean, the handful of Tories that I actually like, people like Desmond Swain.
Yeah.
He predates the DEI policies of Cameron.
He's probably in Thatcher's party.
Yes, probably was. You know? Yeah.
But anyway, so I thought we'd go through. Who wasn't a Tory? Well, James McMurdoch, actually, got kicked out.
He got kicked out of the Tories?
No, he got kicked out of Reform.
Oh, okay. So what was he before that, then? But he's a young guy.
He wasn't a politician.
Okay, well, I mean, that is more than what you'd expect from the UKIP heritage. It's people who are like, no, I've never found something that I could attach myself to until now.
Yeah, and that's literally how James McMurdoch arrived at this point. So, you know, and but he's no longer in Reform, so he got kicked out.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, you know, bad luck. And Luke Campbell, who was the boxer, he's the only guy because he wasn't a politician. Honestly, I'm not sure who else of the Reform notables wasn't at some point a Conservative.
Does your list stop here?
Yes.
Because your list of former Tories was very long. Your list of not former Tories was very short.
Yes, that's true. And the thing is, my list of former Tories is not even complete. They were just the ones that I could think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
There are definitely others who have escaped me that people can leave in the comments. But that's the point, right? It's like, okay, a lot of people are saying, well, this is a Conservative retirement home for failed Tories who can't get back into Parliament any other way.
All I'm seeing is that movie scene in Terminator 2 where the T-1000 is reforming, but this time with a different face on.
Yes. And it's like, okay. And there's a kind of, there's a strange aspect of great replacementism in the Reform Party as well. And you think Richard Tice gets replaced by Zia Yusuf, Rupert Lowe and James McMurdoch get replaced with Lalia Cunningham and Nadeem Zahawi.
Yeah.
There's a weird
affection
for Muslims in Reform, which everyone is having trouble understanding. Because for our American viewers, Reform are only Britain is only 7% Muslim, right? Muslims are not like a swinging voting bloc in this.
They seem a lot more because they have the full backing of the political class, correct, including Reform.
Correct. And they can get MPs because they cluster in certain locations.
Yeah.
So they can get a couple of MPs. Like the independent Gaza MPs are the best example. But they are actually not an influential voting demographic, in my opinion. Like, if you were a right-wing party, you still look at England being 70% English and all of the shires and realise, more than enough demographic.
Oh, if you wanted to go hard on this and you wanted to come out and say halal food banned, mosques banned, mosques closed down, and you were to attract the ire of the entire Muslim voting bloc, it would just mean that you're going to lose seats that you were going to lose anyway. Ones in Birmingham and London and a handful of other places.
You were going to lose seats that were definitely going to either Labour or the Greens.
Yes.
Or maybe an independent Muslim MP.
Yes.
You were never going to win these seats. So they should already have been carved out of your political calculation.
It's costless to not pander to them.
Yeah, exactly. It's costless to any right-wing party. And so it's really bizarre that, like, you know, Nigel Farage, like, we've announced Policy Lalio as our candidate for Mayor of London. She's the only candidate who can defeat Sadiq Khan. It's like, right, so we're just accepting
that
Islamic fife.
That would be a carve-out because, again, Muslims are not a majority in London either, but because they vote as a bloc, that basically means that Sadiq Khan can't lose.
Well,
so putting a Muslim candidate...
That's not necessarily true because London is still 37% English and...
Yeah, but they don't vote as a bloc.
No, that's true. But as we saw on the map of London in the last one, Reform are making some serious inroads in those areas, right? So it's likely that the English vote is going to swing to Reform in London. But also there are lots of migrants who are not Muslim. Like, London is about 30% Muslim, which is a lot. But that's still another 30% of migrants who are not Muslim, right?
I think the argument is that if that 30% goes for one candidate, that candidate wins because every other constituency bifurcates on various bases.
I'm not entirely sure about the logic of this because Sadiq Khan is going to, like, he nearly lost last time because Labour were not very popular and Sadiq Khan himself is not very popular. And you are right, like, the Muslim vote would have been propping up, but it's also the Labour vote that's propping him up, right? There's, like, you know, layers of it. I think that Labour vote is increasingly shrinking. And so I mean, 30% of being the Muslim vote, I mean, that's powerful. But if you could, I mean, it's entirely possible that you could see a sort of 40% Conservative coalition. And the thing is, as well, the Conservatives run terrible candidates in the mayoral elections for some reason.
Yeah, surprisingly bad, actually.
Yeah, really bad. And even then, like the previous one, right, you know, it was really on the snapping at the heels of Sadiq. And the campaign was really bad, and there was no real support from central office. So I don't know why they're not. You know, people in London aren't necessarily just hardcore partisans. They have real problems.
And bear in mind, what, Boris Johnson won it twice, or was it three times? So yep. it is doable.
And that was only in like 2014, 2015. Yeah. You know, it wasn't, you know, that long ago. Mm. London was still a very diverse city back then. You know, London was less than half English in 2011. So it's not like that. I don't think London is that settled, actually, yeah. You know, as an issue.
And by the way, I'm not advocating for reform to put in a Muslim candidate. I mean, the better thing would be to try and engineer it so that the Green parties do, and then the Muslim vote splits between Labour and Greens. That would be the preferable way of engineering it.
Yeah, and like the Aspire Party or whatever the nonsense you got. But yeah, so the conventional wisdom that I'm not sure is true, but I think the candidates have just been bad, is to put a Muslim and Lalia Cunningham. Now, in Lalia's defence, she doesn't seem to be. I mean, she said, "Oh yeah, I am a Muslim," but like for a lot of Muslims, it's an identity rather than a religion, right? As in, like if the average, you know, the average person on the census says, "Oh yeah, I'm a Christian." Okay, yeah, most people in the country are Christians, but the Church of England turnout is 6%. Yes. So, you know, you can say you're a Christian and you support, you know, you celebrate Christmas with presents rather than going to church and worshipping Jesus. You know what I mean? She seems to be that kind of Muslim. But maybe I'm wrong and maybe, you know, I don't know what's in her heart or anything. Mm. And she is a good speaker. She's probably going to be a good campaigner. She'll probably do a good job for them. But people have noticed, Dan Wootton especially, being like, well, hang on a second. You know, is this why is the right wing party fielding a lot of Muslims front and centre? You've got, of course, Nadim, you've got Zia, and now you've got her. It's like, do we get represented in the right wing party, or is this another Conservative party?
Well, the closest we've got is this French Huguenot chap who came over in whatever it was, like 1066 or something.
1600s, probably.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, and then he's done some bizarre things. Like, he went to a pro Iran protest the other day. It's like, yeah, don't get me wrong, you know, I don't care about the mullahs either, but is this really your primary concern? Are the Iranians a significant demographic?
I mean, if the Iranians overthrow their government, I'd be like, oh yeah, good for them, but I wouldn't take time out of my day to...
No, I might them. I might send a tweet.
Yes.
You know, be like, yeah, good luck, Iranians. You know, yeah. I'm against the mullahs as anyone else, so good for you. And then the most bizarre thing was Somaliland. You want to see him at pro-Somaliland protest, right?
Two decades, supported your cause, supported your right to statehood, and I tell you what, the fact you're here today, like you are, making noise, behaving well, you're gaining a lot of public trust in this country. I might have been the first to speak up for you, but believe me, there's many more in Parliament now listening. I'm with you all the way. Yeah. Keep campaigning, yeah. Keep fighting!
Thank you very much. I would like to thank again Nigel Farage for coming and supporting Somaliland like he always does.
What? He always comes out to support Somaliland. I was in my early 30s before I realised that Somaliland was a real place and it wasn't just people mispronouncing Switzerland.
Yes. For anyone who doesn't know, Somalia, on the Horn of Africa, on the southern end of the Horn of Africa, southern flank of it, you've got Somalia, which is an insane failed state that was governed by the Italians. And on the north of it, you have Somaliland. Yes. It's very much sort of like,
And take this relatively, it's the high IQ bit of Somalia.
Yes, it's the bit that has better governance than the Italians. But don't get me wrong, I'm in favour of them having a state, you know.
Exactly. Whatever.
I'm in favour. Good luck with it, lads.
Could I have one maybe one day?
Exactly. I'm just like, but Nige, is this really top of your list of priorities? Like, how is this moving the needle? It's weird. And again, I've got nothing against the Somalilanders. Like, good luck. Or the Iranians, like, good luck. But it's just like, what's going on? Anyway,
okay.
You see what I mean? Like, bizarre things, right? It's like, there's no need to do this.
Yes.
you know, you currently look like you're not really making a British party, and then you're going out and be like, yeah, good luck Iran, good luck Somaliland. It's like,
yeah, I mean, I just apologise to the audience if I haven't had more to say this episode, because I'm just so genuinely confused by all of this.
Well, that's the point. I mean, this was a meme that Reform put out going back to the Conservative...
So, are you saying before I saw this, are you saying Reform put this out?
Yes, well, I mean, it's literally the gold verified Reform UK account monitoring the situation Conservatives with all of the...
I thought that was an attack on Reform, but they were just taking all these Tories.
It looks like an attack on Reform. In the same way that the Conservatives are like, yeah, look at Nadeem Zahawi, what a terrible guy he was. Reform like, yeah, we've got all your crap candidates. We're just hoovering them up. We're monitoring the situation, which is a meme in and of itself. But it's like, okay, but that's just saying, oh, we're a party of turncoats, by the way. Like, we're an entire party of turncoats.
You don't have to do... All you need... Okay, yeah, I admit... Working around the civil service is going to be a serious problem.
Oh.
What you need is a temperament and a skill set that is not necessarily having failed in the Conservative Party. It is somebody who is basically go and find guys who have been parachuted in as a CEO to a failing business
and
have turned it around successfully. That's the skill set you need.
Yes.
And there are going to be hundreds of those guys. Yes. And yes, they're going to be a bit difficult to recruit because they've made some money and probably don't need to work anymore. But just go to them and just say, look, you know, your country needs them. Country needs you. We're going to put you in a senior position. You'll spend
make
4 to 8 years. Yeah, and then we'll make you a lord afterwards. You will be able to get dozens of people with the right skill set.
Yep.
But instead, they're just finding, okay, well, you failed in the Tories, did you? Okay, good, we have you then.
Well, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because... it's fair to assume that every single Tory defector in the back of their mind has, I'm out in the next election.
Yes.
Right. I'm out of the May elections for the councillors. I'm out of the next general for the MPs. Yes. There is no benefit to staying in the Conservatives because we are literally going to experience a worse, well, no, it's not going to be a worse bloodbath than under Sunak, but like a secondary bloodbath where we go from 120 politicians down to about 40 politicians. There's no point of me staying here. The only way I can have a career in politics is if I jump ship as a turncoat to Reform. And so it's like, okay, well, that's interesting because, okay, what's the appeal of this from Reform's perspective? Well, theoretically, you're getting experienced politicians, but what you're actually getting is a bunch of losers, right? People who have failed, people who are not going to keep their seats, people who have not persuaded the public that they should remain.
I want to connect a couple of thoughts. So I put out a tweet last night that's something about be thinking about for a while, where basically, let's see if I can find it. I obviously tweeted too much yesterday, but basically what I was saying is that what if we view... The UK government not as a necessarily a failed system, but a correctly behaving late stage empire, where right. the priority is actually oh here we are. What if all the following true? Britain is no longer a democracy; it's a credential weighted compliance system. Real power flows through Treasury, regulators, and courts because they own risk. The state doesn't govern; it processes risk. Policy is downstream of risk frameworks. And then I kind of lay this out, and that seems to resonate with people. The only way that I can make this make sense is that Reform are not preparing for reform. They're preparing for risk mitigation. And by taking these people, if there was something, a skeleton in the cupboard, it would have already come out. Whereas if you take me and Bo... or Rupert Lowe, or any of the other people, or we had him on here, top chap, barrister.
Stephen Wolfe.
Stephen Wolfe. Yeah, if you take any of those characters, they might actually get something done, but they might say something which is 5 inches to the right of Nigel Farage.
Correct.
So the only reason that he's taking them is a risk mitigation strategy and not a governing strategy.
So the way I think I'm looking at it is... accepting defectors makes sense when you are in the inferior position, right? Mm. So if you've got a giant party like the Conservatives with, you know, 300-odd MPs or whatever, and you get one of them to defect, that raises questions about the integrity of the entire edifice, right? It's like, why would you do that? You're in a commanding position. You have secure seats. what would be the point of defecting? Well, there has to be something moral.
Well, the example was Douglas Carswell leaving the Conservatives to UKIP in whenever it was, like 2015 or something.
Yeah. Why is that? And that's unusual, and it sort of is a crack in the entire edifice, right? But that only works when you're very low in the polls, right? UKIP's, what, polling 5%, 6% or something like that at that time. And then one of them defects. You think, oh, right, something interesting has happened. You would want to take Conservatives at that position. The Tories are like 35, 40% in the polls, whatever it is. UKIP's at like 5 or 6%. Yeah, there's a reason that you drain some of the energy out of that party. But when the position is reversed, and you were on like 30% on average, and they're on 20% on average.
Yes.
Why are you sucking up these losers that you have defeated?
And there has-beens as well.
Yeah, not just losers, also has-beens. Why are you sucking them up? What's the advantage to you? Like, that actually makes them look like they're taking you over.
Genuinely, I think the only thing that I can think of is that if one of them gets attacked and they've been found to have said something a bit based at one point, and the media kicks up a storm, then Nigel can say, well, look, this person was a Conservative for 20 years, don't blame me. Literally the only thing that I can think of. It's not governance, it's not reforming the nation, it's not tackling the civil service, it is comms risk mitigation.
Entirely possible. And they're probably thinking, well, these people, having been politicians in some stripe, will at least know not to say anything interesting on an interview or to the press or something like that. Maybe it's just headache management. But the point I was making is, if you're in the superior position and you're just taking from your former and defeated opponent, which is what the Conservatives are to reform, that's really weird.
This is like Caesar defeating Gaul and then immediately recruiting the generals that did the worst in the campaign from the Gaul side.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And it's like, why would you need them? You've crushed them. You can just put them to death.
Yes.
Obviously, metaphorically, politically. You know, as in, all of these people should just be out of politics at this point. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Nigel should just hold... Like, if Nadeem Zahawi, if I was Nigel, and Nadeem Zahawi had come to me and said, look, I'm thinking about jumping ship to reform. Can I come in? I'd be like, no, but I've got to tweet something. Hang on. Nadeem Zahawi tried to join my party today. No, I will never take one of Boris's failed... Boris Wave, like, pro-vaccine lockdown passport candidates. In fact, when we win, I'm going to denaturalize and deport him. That's what I would have done, right? And the same goes for every other Conservative, Boris himself included, because he was born in America.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, well, fair enough. But, I mean, Reform already have a rule. They will not take you if you have previously been a member of the BNP.
Right, yeah.
So fine, just add the Tories, the Labour and the Lib Dems to that list as well.
Now, when you're in the lead, you can start bullying the other parties. And you should start bullying the other parties. If I were Nigel, I would be posting this 380 majority, 400 majority seat projections and just start naming people. I'd be literally like Trump would, right? Even like, you're out. You're not going to have a seat anymore. It's just going to be one of my guys, and you don't know who he is until I give it to him.
Oh, it's basic game theory. If you're playing poker and you're the big stack, your job, the sound move, is to start bullying mercilessly everybody.
Yes.
That is the correct game theory.
Yes. And yet Nigel Farage is acting like he's in the inferior position. So, I need to steal their men. It's like, no. None of these are their best and brightest. They're all failures, right? So if, like I said, with Danny Kruger, I can understand. Dan Kruger's a smart guy, sensible guy, serious.
That's the one I get.
I get Danny Kruger.
Yeah.
Nadine Dorries, Nadeem Zahawi.
Crazy cat lady.
Any of these weird people, why would you want any of these people?
No idea who they are.
Like, what are you, exactly, no idea who they are. They're completely unnotables. You could just draw up completely loyal people. And another thing is the nature of being a turncoat itself. It's not a good thing to be a turncoat, right? It shows that, as the Groucho Marx quote, well, I have other principles. I'm not a reliable person. And so, okay, that's great, Nige. The wind's with you now.
Yes.
But when things start getting difficult, well, you're surrounded by turncoats.
And just to clarify what I mean there, it's perfectly fine to go on a political journey throughout your life.
Yes.
So, I mean, I was a Tory once and then a UKIPper once and so on. So I've gone through the whole kind of arc thing. That's perfectly fine.
I've been on the journey,
The thing that's not fine is to sign up for a constituency under one party.
Yeah.
And then the moment it looks like you're not going to be able to win again under that party banner to then flip, that's not the same thing.
You should at the very least fall on your sword, right?
Yes.
and say, right, okay, why is that? And then get out and campaign and do whatever it is you're going to do. But no, this is very clearly, they know they're getting whacked. But like I said, being surrounded by turncoats is being surrounded by unreliable people. It's like, I don't want to be surrounded by unreliable people who, when the wind changes and actually it's against Nigel Farage, what if Rupert Lowe starts a party and he just comes out with hardline Trumpian sort of angle, like, we're going to stop all immigration. And Farage's like, oh no, I would never do that. I love my Muslims, you know. Like, what if then the wind starts blowing towards Rupert? And Rupert suddenly, like, you know, 5%, or suddenly is at 7%, suddenly is at 12%. And Reform are down to 20% with the Conservatives and Labour. And they're all starting to look like the, you know, do those guys go, oh, actually, I'm moving across? How do you know?
Yeah, I kind of doubt that Rupert would have let them in.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Rupert's not going to let them in. But the point is, you're surrounded by Conservative turncoats. That's not a good thing. It's not morally upstanding to be a turncoat.
No, agreed.
Like, there should be a great deal of public contrition over the fact that you felt the need to do this.
Yes.
Like, but no, they just saunter on over.
What did they do after the war with the with the French comfort girls? I mean, they at least paraded them in the street and shaved their hair.
Oh, they shaved their hair, yeah.
Yeah, why can't we do that with Tories?
Yeah, and then you get let into the party because you've been through the ringer.
Well, maybe.
Anyway,
yeah.
Andy Burnham, a great Manchester mayor, is like, well, I suspect Farage's willingness to represent any old Tory into reform is not...
And Andy's right.
I completely agree. Andy is right. Completely agree with him. And the question that he's basically raising is there a single Tory you wouldn't accept? What happens when Boris is like, yeah, okay, I know I may have flooded the country with millions of foreigners, but can I join you as well?
Yeah, why not?
He's got experience in government, Nigel.
I mean, presumably.
He can raise money.
The only ones he wouldn't take are the ones that we would actually not mind. So presumably, if Sir Desmond Swain, Suella Braverman, and Liz Truss tried to join, presumably they wouldn't, because they're the only ones who were potentially suitable.
Agreed. It's really, really bizarre, and it's something that's beginning to tell. So Reform's membership is actually dropping now. You will see, it's not only by a few hundred, but it's only been a few days, right? So this is from the 13th of January, where it's 270,729. And then from yesterday, it was down a few hundred. So it's not nothing, but it should be going in the other direction, right? So it's something to keep an eye on.
Yes.
Especially as these things tend to... that you buy a year's membership anyway, right? So these are people who are now just like, yeah, I'm not into it. But as things go on, I do think that we will start to see...
But the engine has started to splutter.
Yeah, and this is a worry. And the reason this all bothers me is because of people like this. So this was just a poll from before Nadeem Zahawi was announced, from Joseph Bohm. Now, Joseph Bohm is a Reform UK councillor. He's one of those 19-year-olds that got on the councils. And as you can see, he's doing the right thing for the right reason, right? He's, you know, he joined Reform to stand up for his family community.
He's trying to make a difference.
He's young, he's idealistic. The people are speaking, time for real change. But he's going to find himself in the Conservative Party. And ironically, he's just going to... And so what is happening is that obviously there isn't going to be any real change. I think that Reform will just tinker around the edges. And Nigel, feel free to completely blow me away on this one, right? Feel free to go balls to the wall radical and, you know, be like, right, okay, we've got legislation to pass. We've got things to repeal. We have got people to deport, right? You feel free to prove me wrong on this. But I don't think anything major is going to change if the party of concern, if Reform just morphs T-1000 style into the Conservatives and suddenly find themselves back in government.
It reminds me of the last paragraph of Animal Farm by George Orwell.
I can't remember.
I looked from man to pig and pig to man.
Oh yes,
and they were all Tories.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Not exactly how George Orwell wrote it, but yeah.
But that is exactly what this is looking like, and so
yeah.
It's, you know, it's young men like Joseph who are going to be completely sold up the river and going to become very, very cynical and jaded about the system, which obviously...
Many years ago, I went to a presentation by Bob Ayling of British Airways. Do you remember when British Airways, they used to have the flag on the tail?
Yeah, and but they don't now.
Well, they've gone back to it now, but they had a period about 10 years where what they did is they put, like, African women murals on, you know, and people in India and stuff like that on the back of their airplanes. And I was saying to him, I don't think this is a good idea, Bob. I don't think you want to mess with a brand like this. And his marketing guy jumped in at that point and said, oh, nonsense. The worst impact that it can have is no impact as a marketing campaign. I was like, no.
Anyone who knows anything about this.
You've got a brand that people identify with. If you dilute the value of that brand, you can absolutely go down. And he just looked, because I was quite a young man at the time, he just looked at me like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, exactly the thing that I said was going to happen happened, and they rolled it back after a few years and started to put the flag back up. The point here is, what if Reform basically dilute their brand to the point where they become seen in people's minds as a variant of the Conservative Party? It's not impossible that people then start thinking, oh, well, if it's just the Tories anyway, I'm a little bit less attractive. People who are going to vote Tory are a little bit less inclined to go across. And Reform comes down a bit, Conservatives go up a bit, and Labour just edge up a bit, and then Labour win again.
Yep. And again, this poll looks nice, but in the poll of polls, actually,
it's
a lot tighter. And you are right. I think a lot of people will just be like, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, like Nigel should have put the Conservatives out by now, right? I can understand if literally the Conservatives were like 5% and Nigel was like, okay, I'll take a few of the ones I like. But the rest of you cast into the wilderness. This is what I am, your, like, literally like Hulagu Khan, who turns up at Baghdad. It's like, no, I am the punishment that God has wrought upon you for your many sins. Mm. I don't know what the sins are, but since I'm here, there must be loads, right?
Yes.
And so I'm here to destroy Baghdad, and he does. If Farage was in that sort of commanding position, maybe you could take some ones that you thought were good, but just taking random defectors en masse when you're in the superior position is just bizarre, and I don't see a reason for it. And I don't know what he's doing. I can only assume that he has so thoroughly purged his own party that there's no one else competent around him, and that they just think, okay, we just need bodies.
Honestly, I think on this more, but the strongest theory I have at this point, it is purely comms risk management. And that's what you do when you're an insurgent party getting attacked all the time by the media. Yeah. For being racist. It's not what you do when you're in a leading position and the media has to come to you. But I don't think he can get his... I think his neuroplasticity died maybe in that aeroplane crash. And he cannot update his mental model of how to run a party beyond 20, whatever it was, 13.
Honestly, I'm not even sure he's... I mean, I know lots of people from UKIP who know him and were hurt by him personally. And I'm not sure he's ever been brilliant at running a party anyway. So... Anyway, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us, folks. Go and get your issue of Islander now before it is gone, because it will be gone, and you'll be in my replies going, can I get a copy of issue whatever? And I'm like, no, they're never being reprinted. I'm never doing it. They're moments in time, and they signify the journey that we're on. So go and get it now, and thanks for joining us.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.